south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, with all these devices people are connected into now, it seems like almost everybody spends around 6 hours a day screwing around on some kind of screen or other. And you know, I've started to notice that there's a new kind of a disease or syndrome going around. For lack of a better term, how about phantom ringer syndrome? You know what I'm talking about? Seems like a kind of a social epidemic. For the past couple months anyway, I've been noticing people digging into their pockets, checking their devices, their smartphones, whatever, because they think they actually are hearing it ringing, but it's not. That's why I'm calling it the phantom ringer syndrome. I mean, it's happened to me, and I don't even have a smartphone. I just have the dumb ones, you know, those throwaway jobs that cost 15 or 20 bucks and you get 100 free minutes. Once you get down here, you gotta have one of those. Maybe two. Down here, they call them frijolero phones. I mentioned that before because they look like a giant-size frijole, you know, refried bean. By the way, if you're a local Latin and you have a frijolero phone, it's slightly embarrassing and people don't flash them around much. You're considered low class, kind of a cheapskate. Down here they call that a tacaño. That means cheapskate in Spanish. Which is why you'll always see Latins flashing their smartphones, but when they've got a frijolero, it's always stuck somewhere down in the purse or in the pocket or in the cleavage. Now, believe it or not, almost all Latins have a frijolero phone somewhere, though they'll never admit it. Why? Because they're forever late on paying their smartphone bills and they get cut off a lot. But that frijolero, though it's ugly and low class to them, it's a great standby and you can always pump $2 into it and get some minutes right away. Like I said, everyone has one, but they do not like to admit it. Because down here you are what you drive and what you own. And for Latins, the type of phone you own is a mark of your social class, believe it or not. Which is why so many people buy high-end smartphones and can't even afford to pay the monthly bill. In fact, you can't believe the high percentage of Latins who get cut off from their phone service a couple of days at the end of every month because they're such chronic late payers. Not to mention, I don't think I've known a single Latin who hasn't had his electric or his water service cut off either because of the same problem. It's all about that mañana gene we talk about so much. However, what I said about those cheap frijolero phones does not apply to gringos. Why? We're those crazy oddball gringos and we can have a frijolero phone if we want, and it doesn't diminish our social status whatsoever. Bottom line, I highly recommend them over smartphones. They really do keep you somewhat anonymous and help to shrink your overall footprint. And it's easy enough to change that SIM chip for just $4 or $5. I do it myself every couple of months as soon as I realize that too many people have my phone number, or I start getting cold calls and text messages. Then it's time to get a new SIM chip. Of course, then you have a brand new number, but that's the main objective, isn't it? Anyway, I think society, especially first world society, is getting more technologically neurotic by the second. The more of these so-called helpful digital instruments we have, the crazier we're getting. I mean, if it's happening to me and I'm not even tied into that super smartphone crap, I'm talking about that phantom ring syndrome I mentioned earlier. I know it's got to be happening to you. I mean, how many times have you found yourself digging in your pocket for a phone that really didn't ring, or even waking up at night and going for that phone and it didn't ring? Come on, fess up. Come to think of it, if it doesn't have a scientific name yet, maybe we can call it Mueller's syndrome. Come on, what better way to have a permanent legacy? I mean, look, there's Parkinson's, Down's, Cushing's, Alzheimer's. Hey, I know, when you're dead, you're dead. But when you've got a disease named after you, then in a way, a little piece of you lives on forever. Mueller's syndrome. Mom will like that one. Where do I sign up? So I guess now we should talk about Latin America, huh? Okay, speaking of names, when we gringos and expats first arrived down here, soon enough in our heads, we start translating names, Spanish names, into English. We'll do anything to try to grasp at a memory aid. And often as we translate things in our head, we just can't believe what we're coming up with. For example, let's talk about proper names. Occasionally, you'll come across a translation that's extremely weird. But that's okay, because the weirdness makes it stick with you. So, just the other day, I was watching a live broadcast from Brazil. And the female reporter's name was Vanessa Dios. Do you know what Dios means? D-I-O-S? As in adios? which doesn't actually mean see you later. It means go with God. Well, Dios means God. So the reporter's translated name? Vanessa God. That's right, God. Now I ask you, if someone up in the States' name was Vanessa God, that's G-O-D, wouldn't that get you some undue attention? Probably get your ass kicked regularly. Then again, maybe people would be afraid to get near you. Who knows? Now, over the years, I've asked a few Latins about these funky religious names some people seem to have, wondering if some of them aren't a bit overboard, in fact, sacrilegious. And you know, I usually get a kind of puzzled look like, why would you even ask such a question? Those names are normal. Now, people up in the States know that certain Latin people can be named Jesus or Jesus, which is a name native-born Americans up in Seattle, Milwaukee, and Cleveland would never bestow on their own kid, lest he get picked on and get his ass kicked regularly, too. Nope, it seems to be a purely Latin phenomena. In fact, when I went to high school up in Chicago, there was a kid named Jesus, and he soon dropped it completely and went by his second name, Manuel, and we called him Manny. Why? Well, you figure it out. Now get this. I know for a fact there's a guy down here named Hector Jesus Sanchez Dios. Nice guy, salt of the earth, construction worker, yet I've always felt a little funny around him. In fact, every time I'm around the guy, I think of my Aunt Mary, whose favorite curse up in Chicago was Jesus God. Now, that's weird, especially if you're in the presence of a guy named Jesus God. But that's not all. My good old buddy, expat Eddie, has an employee at one of his restaurants. Her name is Blanca Negro. Blanca meaning white and negro meaning black. That means her name is White Black in English. Now, white is a common last name up in the States, as is black. But white is not a common proper first name up in the States. However, Blanca is a very common woman's name here in Latin America. I once had a cleaning lady named Blanca. Blanca Torres, which translates in English to, get this, white towers. So as you spend more and more time down here in Latin America, that's the kind of stuff you'll run into when you start doing those translations in your head. And sometimes you just have to laugh or at least smile. So get used to it. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the word negro when used down here, like I've mentioned a few times now, first world American Hollywood movies are all dubbed. There's almost no subtitles anymore except in older movies. In fact, the younger generation of Latins are so used to it, when they are flicking through the channels and they see an older movie that's in English and it's got Spanish subtitles, they get bored quickly and often change the channel or say, hey, how come it's not in Spanish? So these days, the younger generations look down on subtitles. But older generations of Latins find subtitles comforting, kind of old school. In fact, I've even heard older Latins, people over 50, say they don't like dubbed movies. They'd rather have the subtitles. Why? Because they say it was a way to learn a bit of English. While people spoke on the screen in English, they could look at the translations below and pick some of it up. Now, don't laugh. I actually know a few people who learned their English 100% by watching TV that way, and they're pretty damn good at it. One guy I know learned it so well he even speaks without a Spanish accent. I know it's rare, but it does happen. But now, with all the programming coming from the first world dubbed in Spanish, that's just not going to happen anymore. In fact, just the other day, I was watching that brand new movie that came out called Race, the Jesse Owens story. You've probably heard about it. It's about Jesse Owens, the black runner, who won 4 gold medals in the Berlin Olympics in 1936. And in doing so, made fools out of the Nazis' so-called super race. Well, let me tell you, it was a weird experience watching that movie with a bunch of Latin guys and gals. And of course, when you buy the DVD down here, from a pirate, of course, it's about a buck, by the way, you generally have 4 choices. You can listen to the movie in English, as it was intended, or listen to it dubbed in Spanish, which, as you might have guessed, every Latin down here infinitely prefers. And on each DVD, you have your choice of subtitles, English or Spanish. So, like I said, if there are any Latins in the room, you won't be able to get away with watching it in English with a Spanish subtitle. Not anymore. Even though for them, just a few years ago, it was perfectly acceptable. And you know, even us gringos who speak pretty good Spanish, we just cannot stomach watching a first world Hollywood movie dubbed in Spanish. It just ruins the whole experience. As for me, when I'm in that spot, I squirm a bit and stealthily slip my iPod earbud in and listen to a podcast or two. So anyway, I guess it's much the same reaction when you say to young Americans, let's watch a classic movie, and when they see it's in black and white, they go, yuck, black and white? Like my old Aunt Mary would say, Jesus God, Johnny, it's not in color? Anyway, you get the point. Wait a minute, what was the point? Oh yeah, so So I'm sitting around in someone's living room watching that movie Race with a bunch of Spanish speakers. So they're listening to it dubbed in Spanish, naturally. So I'm stuck, ready to be completely bored out of my wits for about 2 hours. Of course, I've got that gringo advantage going, and I could say, let's listen to it in English. And I'd get no argument. They'd be nice and play along. But you know, when you're a guest in someone's house and in their country, you don't want to pull rank, be a jerk, and rain on everyone else's parade. Anyway, like I said, I'm sitting in this room. It's dubbed in Spanish with English subtitles. Of course, I'm way off the gringo tourist trail, so I'm the only gringo there. And once in a while, one of the spectators would say, pause it for a second, and then they'd ask me, the only gringo expert in the room, about something that happened on the screen they just didn't understand. And I'll tell you, with a movie like this, taking place in 1936, a lot of it they just don't get. So, about every 10 minutes or so, they're pausing the film and firing off questions to me. Now, if you watch this flick, you'll see it's not just Hollywood's version of historical fact, but that it's a morality tale, too. It's as much about winning those gold medals as about what the black athlete Jesse Owens had to face in the way of prejudice and racism back in the 30s in both the U.S. and in Nazi Germany right before World War II, where they held the Olympics. In fact, it almost seemed like through the whole movie it was a discussion of who was more racist or prejudiced, Nazi Germany against the Jews and the blacks, versus prejudice and racism against blacks in the U.S. at that time. Now, the movie was kind of preachy, but good. But here's where the whole thing went sour if you happen to speak Spanish only and were watching that movie down here, dubbed in Spanish, of course. Now, I know a lot of you listeners are going to see this movie because it's highly rated and will surely win some Oscars and such. That said, let me demonstrate now how Spanish dubbing has really tamed the nasty effects down in this movie. Let's start with the fact that the Spanish word for black is negro, and the Spanish word for the N-word is also negro. Nope, no difference at all. Exact same spelling, too. So there I was, watching the movie and occasionally looking at the faces of the crowd as the N-word and the negro word passed by. No impact. That's what you call completely lost in translation. And get this, when certain black actors in the movie would use the derogatory word against whites, cracker, which we all know means white trash, pretty much. Well, since there is no Spanish translation for the word cracker, it came out blanco, which means white in Spanish, just like the word blanco in Spanish describes any white person. So, the total effect of calling a guy cracker, again, no impact, completely lost in translation. The point here is, a well-done first-world Hollywood movie loses a lot of its impact once translated into Spanish. Of course, it can't be helped. Just note that after you learn a little Spanish, you'll be the designated expert too and will be called upon to answer, sometimes delicate and somewhat unanswerable questions, when you're watching pirated first world DVDs with your new Latin friends. But here's the real kicker. There was a scene showing blacks couldn't stay in the same hotels as whites and they had to go to the back of the bus and all that. And the Spanish guy whose house we were watching this movie at turned to me and said, Jesus God, Johnny, I can't believe how badly your country treated black people. Actually, he didn't say Jesus Dios, but something like that. Now, this from a guy who's got two live-in maids who he treats like crap, won't even give him a ride in his car if he sees him walking because he says they make his car smell like burning wood and he doesn't want it to penetrate the leather seats. A guy who practically every time I run into him throws around what's considered the most hideous racist word in the Spanish dictionary. That would be Indio, I-N-D-I-O. A word middle, upper middle class and wealthy Latins often use to insult one another in private when one has done something stupid. So when Latins think Americans are racist and prejudiced, they're really calling the kettle black. The fact is, it's so annoyingly prevalent down here, you have to just kind of ignore it or it'll really get to you. Which is, by the way, why indigenous folks just love working for gringos. They consider us great bosses. And really, compared to Latins, most of us are. And we do a lot of extra things for them and their family that your normal Latin upper or middle class people will never do. Like, for example, a friend of mine who you'll meet if you come down to my July 2016 Latin Insider Seminar, he's actually sending his maid's two little kids to private school. No, not a helicopter school like he sends his kid to, but a nice, solid private school that has nice facilities where the kid can actually learn. So why is he doing that? Well, because he's been down here a long, long time and he knows how horribly deficient those public schools are. Now, if you think I'm exaggerating about how bad these schools really are, Get this. Every year, there's a newspaper and television public drive asking for people to donate pencils for the kids to use at public school. Talk about sad and pathetic, huh? Yep, public schools. Socialism at its finest. By the way, since we've been talking about some of the crazy oddities in the Spanish language, how about this one? You know, if someone up in the States, for example, is addicted to speed, they say he's a speed addict or a speed freak. Or if he's addicted to cocaine, he's a coke addict or cokehead. Well, down here in Latin America, they don't add the second word addict to the noun. They don't say adicto de cocaína, which literally translates to addicted to cocaine. Instead, they add the suffix ero. So that would be coquero. Or for marijuana, marihuanero. That goes for other addictions or extreme likes as well. For example, if someone's addicted to hot dogs, he's a hot doguero. I kid you not. So down here, if someone does something in excess or has a compulsion for something, most often you'll just take the word and add ero to the end of it, and that'll be the descriptive word, or what the locals will call you anyway, which also applies to your profession or career or the job you're doing. For example, if you're a carpenter, you're a carpintero. If you're a garbage man, you're a basurero. Basura means garbage, and the ero means, well, that's what you do. And of course, if you're female, it's not ero, it's era. Basurera would be a female garbage person. But I have to tell you, I've been down here 27 years now almost, and I've never seen a female garbage collector. Yes, down here, you've got that lag time going, so many jobs are well delineated between the sexes. Whereas up in the States, we've had those equal opportunity laws for some years now, and things are balancing out, sometimes by force. And of course, Latin countries have followed through with the equal opportunity laws too, but things have not balanced out because it is a very racist, classist, and sexist society. So for example, if you went to a big city in Latin America and you went online to check out, for example, engineers or architects or lawyers, you'll find in most professions and careers, women make up less than 5%, with the exception of teachers and nurses. For example, up in the States, about 50% of all scumbag lawyers are women, and about 20% or more of architects and engineers are women. Now, in all my time down here, I've only met two female lawyers, and only one woman engineer, and one woman who's going to architecture school. Meanwhile, I've met many male engineers, architects, and lawyers. So, in male-dominated sexist societies like Latin America, women have equal rights under the law and on paper, but it's not really so. However, you don't see women complaining, not vocally anyway. You don't see protests in the streets and people holding banners and signs out in front of government buildings and political get-togethers. Though it's true, every Latin country has women's organizations and feminist groups. However, they don't get much publicity and don't have much power. Not yet anyway, but it's coming. That said, there are a lot of indigenous organizations and you will see a lot of them protesting. But they're not protesting against sexism, though there's plenty of that. They're protesting against racism and classism. I mean, after all, they are the poorest segment of Latin society, and they're the ones who have to send their kids to those really crappy public schools, and they're the ones who've got no other choice than to go to those medieval public hospitals, too. Oh, and one last thing about women's jobs and careers down here in Latin America. Just like up in the States, it probably won't surprise you to know that around 50% of the people who work in the malignant rectum of government are women. Although those figures are deceiving because at the highest postulant levels of the executive branch in Congress, well, you know, as the godfather of soul, James Brown, would say, it's a man's world because less than 5% of those spots are occupied by women. And even though some women reach the very highest levels, that is, they become presidential or vice presidential maggot bags, if you look at the whole structure of the system, you'll see they're pretty much token. Just do the numbers. It's easy to see. By the way, I was talking to a newly arrived gringo the other day. Well, newly arrived, I guess he's been down here a year or so. To me, that's newly arrived. He's a nice, well-mannered guy, and he says he still feels a little uncomfortable when his cleaning lady and gardener and the guy at the grocery store and the propane delivery guy refer to him as Don Martin. Now, this gringo expat's first name is Martin. And you know, you'll find out that the people you run into on a repeated basis who finally realize what your first name is, people at the grocery store, dry cleaners, shoe repair shop, whatever, Soon enough, you'll notice they're going to add that D-O-N, the Don, in front of your name as a token of respect, because that's what they do down here. So my friend Marty says he feels a little uncomfortable, a little embarrassed when he's referred to by the locals as Don Martin. That's Don Martin. But he says at the same time, it feels kind of nice. He feels more important than he ever did up in the States because he was just a regular guy up there. Now he's Don Martin. I mean, really, we've all seen the Godfather movies, right? When a guy becomes a Don, it's something special. It's no wonder gringos feel a little funny when people call him Don. I did at first. But remember, Don Corleone, he earned that. I mean, he was a mafia chief. But down here, you've earned that simply because you're a gringo and you're living off the gringo tourist trail where gringos are pretty rare. So it's true, we don't deserve it, not one bit. But hey, why knock it? So when you come down, you'll find out what it's like to be a bass player in a well-known band. No one knows your name, but you get invited to all the parties and get the backstage passes. Like Expat Eddie says, once you've been king for a couple of weeks, you don't feel like giving that crown back. So anyway, when you move down here and you come in contact with the local Latin people and they finally realize what your first name is, when they figure out you're not on vacation or just passing through, you will become Don something or another. You'll get the Don treatment. And ladies, you'll get the Doña treatment. That's D-O-N-A. Doña. So if you're Christine, for example, you'll be Doña Cristina. And again, at first, you're going to feel a little strange about that. You might even look over your shoulder like, who are they talking to? Somebody important just walk in? Again, it's a sign of respect because you're something that everyone wants to be and really can't, meaning a gringo or a gringa. But there's one other thing concerning gringo women down here. Soon enough, you'll figure out that respectful Doña term they'll put in front of your name also insinuates that you're married. So you'll soon find out that if you're over, let's say, 35, you'll be a Doña. However, if you're younger, let's say between 20 and 35, you'll be addressed by the Latin version of a Ms., you know, M.S., that is, a woman of unknown marital status, and you'll be called Seno. No, it's not S-E-N-O. That means, well, breast or boob. Very close, but no cigar. Actually, it's written S-E-N-O, but instead of the N, there's an Enye. It's an N with a little squiggle above it. You might know that's the extra letter in the Spanish alphabet. You did know they had an extra letter, right? And it's pronounced like an N with a yay after it. So it's N-Y-A. Now, there's an ongoing controversy down here because it's not only gringos that are referred to as Don whatever or Doña whatever or Seno whatever, but also Latins in positions of power or who are born into wealthy families or who are bosses. They're called Don or Doña or Seno too. Again, it's a title of respect that most workers will use when referring to their boss. So do note if you hear a Latin person refer to a lady as Seno instead of Doña, that's kind of a compliment. Because Seno carries with it the insinuation that the person you're referring to is young and unmarried. Obviously, it can be a way to butter up a person too. Just as, up in the States, referring to an older woman as Miss can sometimes make a person's day. Whereas referring to a woman as Doña can be used as a backhanded insult too. Because it immediately insinuates an older married lady. Now, of course, us gringos make all kinds of gaffes and mistakes when using the Spanish language. However, thankfully, Latins of all stripes cut us a lot of slack. So no matter how much we screw up on the details, they never hold it against us. In fact, they think it's kind of endearing. Again, it's all part of that gringo advantage. Now, one of the funny things you'll find is that gringos who've been down here a long, long time won't refer to a guy as Don anything, even though everyone around him or her might be calling that person Don whatever. For example, the guy you might have bought your house from or are renting your apartment from is surely called Don whatever by everyone he comes in contact with, meaning all of his Latin workers, associates, renters, etc. Now, being a gringo, it's not at all necessary that you call him Don whatever. And if you do, you just might embarrass him a little. You're the gringo, and remember, even if that guy or gal comes from generations of wealth and is in high society, you've got that gringo advantage going for you, and it crosses through all social barriers, lower, middle, and upper class. I know, it's kind of sophomoric and twisted and doesn't make sense, but that's the way it is down here, and I'm sure you're getting the hang of it by now. By the way, you kind of get screwed if your name is already Donnie or Don, because then you'll be Don Don, which sounds really strange but true, and I'm sure you'll crack up if someone called you Don Don. By the way, that Don Don or Don Donnie thing reminds me of a pretty good Chinese restaurant in Chicago and an insect we call the June bug. They call them Ron Rons down here, R-O-N-R-O-N. Not to be confused with just one Ron, that's R-O-N, which means rum in Spanish. And by the way, in the month of May, throughout most of Latin America, that's when the June bugs come out in force. We're talking virtual armies. If you think you've got swarms of June bugs up north, dive bombing you and all the streetlights in the neighborhood and getting tangled in your hair, well, you ain't seen nothing yet. Down here, you've got 10 times as many. And a good number will always worm their way into your house. There's no weather stripping on doors down here, and probably only about 1% of homes have any kind of screens at all. So get ready for that once-a-year invasion of ronrons. And thank God you've got a maid to sweep out your house and a gardener to clean out your gutters and downspouts. Well, I guess you have to see it to believe it anyway. Another thing you'll find is that at a certain time every year, the wasps will start building their nests around your house, and you'll have to send your maintenance guy out there to knock them down. Now, I've done it a few times myself, but you should leave it to your maintenance man. He's the expert. And you'll want a really long pole to do that. Keep your distance. And believe me, you don't want to wait until a wasp or a hornet or a bee's nest is as big as your head. And once you've knocked it down, well, you've solved the problem pretty much. They won't really swarm. They'll just kind of be disoriented for a while and head out into the brush. Believe me, I've seen my maintenance guy knock down 50, maybe 100 of these things over the years. Without a real problem whatsoever, they just kind of find another spot, hopefully out in the woods, and start all over. Now, as far as other annoying creatures, about every 7 years, you got those damn cicadas. They're so loud, they're almost deafening. Though you won't hear much of that if you're living directly in the city, but if you're living slightly out in the boonies, it can get extremely loud. But since they're just in the trees, they won't bother you or get into your hair or your house or anything. But man, they are disgusting looking and Hillary ugly. That said, we're getting to the end of the show now, so let me remind you, you can still sign up for my July 2016 Latin Insider Seminar held in and around Guatemala, mostly well off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Yes, it just might be the easiest and fastest way to prepare your own Plan B. That is, voting with your feet. And if you don't want to vote with your feet right now, we'll set you up with a nice network of expat friends and professionals. So in the future, when you solidify your Plan B, you'll know just who to get in touch with. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link at the top of the page for full info and details. And don't forget, while you're at that main page, to check out the famous John Galt's pre- and post-seminar trips. While you're down here, you might as well really get your boots on the ground and let John Galt take you on one or even two of his extra special, extraordinary trips. And you'll find the links there at thenewexpat.com, too. And finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel to see the slides and photos that go along with the audio. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!